This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to part two of the interview with Dr. Iman Darieh, who studies contrast agents to detect diseases as early as possible, such as Parkinson's, at Nuvox Pharma in Tucson, Arizona. There's a few seconds of overlap, so we can pick up right where we left off in The People Behind the PhDs. Stories. Stories are humanity's original technology, so I'm proud to carry on the traditional technology and share this story with you. Whether you're on an iPhone or an Android, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, or another podcast service, whether you're at home, in your car, at work, on public transportation, working out, or just walking around, I dedicate my shows to you. Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts, Consequential Stories for Life.
You know, after, so when I started my bachelor's degree, like many typical students who just get to school as the first in their family, I didn't have a clear vision of what I wanted to do. But being with really great classmates and being around them for 4 years, I saw that I knew I wanted to do a master's degree. So I started a master's degree in Iran. I got one master's degree in
Iran. Oh, you did? So at the same school, you just continued?
No, I moved to Tehran, to the capital of Iran, for my master's
degree. Tehran, yeah, it's a big deal.
It was a big deal. Yeah, I want to be closer to my family. Tehran to my place was like 4 hours drive.
Yeah.
I could do it almost every weekend.
And Tehran has like one of the most beautiful mountain ranges next to it.
It's similar to Salt Lake City.
Okay, it's stunning.
You have mountains that has snow, and on the other side, you know, you have a lot of land.
Yeah.
So it's very similar to Tehran.
Yeah, I mean, everyone said it's stunning, beautiful mountains next to Tehran.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ski resort.
ski resort. So then you moved to Tehran to do your master's degree.
To do my master's. And it was, when I went there, I realized that I wanted to do my PhD.
Okay.
So from day one, I knew that. What happened was that in the second year of my master's degree, there was an opportunity for me to come to the U.S. I met a professor from university in the United States. He came, you know, to teach a workshop over there about mass spectroscopy and NMR. These are like two types of instruments that a lot of chemists use, you know, to characterize the product that they make. So after they make something, they want to make sure it is what they claim. So they use some tests to, you know, characterize.
Is this mass, what is it, mass
spectroscopy.
Mass spectroscopy.
Copy.
Thank you. Is that something you, people use for DNA analysis?
They use in a lot of labs.
Okay, so if you use
a lot of medical applications, these days people have mass spec, you know, in the lab.
So if you're not a chemist, like I'm not, you might hear this mass, what is it?
Mass spec,
thank you. I should have practiced that word earlier in shows like Forensic Files when you're studying, like trying to figure out a DNA profile of something.
Or in a water quality labs.
Okay.
So this instrument is used, you know, for those labs as well.
Okay, so
when I say lab, sorry, you know, I use the shortened version, laboratory.
That's okay. Thank you. No, I feel really dumb. So
not for you. No. It happened many times that, you know, I used lab and, you know, people didn't know what I was talking about.
So an American professor comes to Tehran, you're doing your master's degree, and you met this person.
In a workshop.
Okay,
that
thank you.
For like 6 weeks.
Okay.
And he said, you know, there is opportunity in our university. If you are interested, you know, we have a program for international students. So if you are qualified, you need to take, you know, like TOEFL exam, the exam that shows your English speaking or English capabilities in general, writing, speaking, reading, all of those. And then, you know, if you meet all the criteria, then, you know, our school could be a good place for you.
Which school was this?
That was Southern Illinois
University.
Edwardsville. So there are two campuses, like, you know,
a main campus and a satellite campus.
Carbondale.
And
Edwardsville. So I felt like that was a great opportunity. This person was very supportive. His name was, unfortunately, because of cancer, he passed away. Last year, it was one of the most tragic moments of my life when I figured out he had cancer, and after, you know, losing me, it was really sad for me. He was Very nice to meet
What's his name?
Sadiq Kazari.
Okay, is he Iranian originally, or?
He was originally Iranian, but he came to the U.S. before the revolution.
Okay.
And he did,
so he was an American, Iranian-American.
Yeah,
okay.
And he was a professor at Southern Illinois University at Wharton.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I started, you know, to make sure I have all the, like, the scores, whatever is needed, you know, to get into the program. And
wow.
Since
it's a lot of work. So anyone who doesn't know, so I studied in Germany, and I had to take this test, like the TOEFL test. It was called Prüfung der Nachweis der Deutschsprachkenntnisse bestanden. And so it's basically, you have to, like, basically prove your ability to use your second language well enough to study
in
that language at a university.
Yes.
So this is an extra amount of work you're doing.
Oh, yeah, totally.
In order to prove that you're good enough,
yeah,
to work at an American university and,
yeah,
study there. Okay.
At the time, you know, I had a master's degree and I was a researcher in,
yeah,
chemistry. I had publication, but still this was something needed.
Wow.
Yeah. So it wasn't easy to come to the U.S. I mean, it was really difficult. That was one of the things. So I started going to classes, you know, to make sure that, you know, I can do well on the exam. And I got my scores, everything. I went to the U.S. Embassy. And, you know, as you know, Iran do not have U.S. Embassy in Iran, so we had to go to another country.
Turkey?
Any of the neighbors. Turkey, UAE, Cyprus, or some other countries on the northern area of Iran in order to apply for U.S. visa.
Wow.
So you first need to get a first visa to get to a second country. Then, you know, you go for an interview to get your U.S. visa.
Okay.
So my visa application was rejected first place.
Wow.
So you spend a lot of money. You put in, you know, a lot of time and effort. So I'm mentioning this, you know, not to complain.
No, I understand. But
you know, make sure that people understand it's not an easy way. You know, you have to do a lot of things in order to come into this country.
Yeah, so you're having to sort of develop like a bachelor's level of expertise on visa things.
Itself,
plus,
yeah,
plus you have to invest money into the travel to a,
yeah,
different country and be vetted completely.
Completely.
That you know you're,
yeah,
a decent person who wants to do research in the United States.
Exactly.
It's a lot of work.
Still, my visa application was denied.
Okay.
So there were some other difficulties at the time. I don't want to get into all those details. And so the second time, like 6 or 8 months later, I got my visa.
Okay.
To come to the United States. And at the time, I came with my girlfriend, who is my wife now. So we came together, but at the time we were friends. So I came to, I went to SIUE, Southern Illinois University at Wharton.
And she was studying chemistry as well.
We were classmates in Iran. We were working in the same lab, laboratory. She was a year behind me. But at the time, you know, after I got rejected, you know, when I applied for my first visa, I was already graduated from my master's degree, but she was in her, like, last year. She didn't defend her dissertation at the time. So during the second time, I was already like 9-10 months out of school, and she was just, you know, a graduate.
Okay. So the timing was good then in that way.
It was good. Yes.
Some destiny.
I agree. Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was lucky in that sense. So we went to Edwardsville. We did 2 years master's program again. And the reason why we did a master's program again was that, so to be a good student for graduate school, you need to have really good fundamentals. And I had that because I went to a very tough school for my bachelor's degree. But the problem was that I had very low grades. So with those grades...
So you had good... So when you say good... You had good fundamentals as a researcher.
And as a student.
And as a student.
Good GPA.
Okay.
You know, and for... And like all the chemistry courses, you need to have, you know, a good score.
Okay.
In those courses. And I didn't have that. I didn't have that at the time. And I didn't want to go a second... rank or third rank type university.
Okay.
I wanted to go to a good university for my PhD.
So you wanted, that's why you decided to apply for a master's program in order to show that you are...
To get a U.S. degree.
A U.S. degree to prove...
That allowed me to,
yeah,
go to a good school for a PhD.
Wow, this is incredible dedication as a chemist.
Yeah, and again, if I come back again, I would do the same thing because, again, you know, it was very important for me to,
yeah,
do a PhD in school that has good credentials.
At this time, let's hear from our sponsor. This People Behind the PhDs episode is sponsored by Harp Concepts. Are you an up-and-coming artist with a bright idea? Are you a startup company who needs to prove your concept? Or are you a person who likes to personalize special gifts? Harp Concepts makes high-quality 3D models for a fraction of the price of big-name companies. Learn more at harpconcepts.com. That's harpconcepts.com. You know, so I talked to another person who did her PhD. She's from Kingston, Jamaica, mm-hmm. near there. And she, your story reminds me of hers, where she had some problems academically,
yeah.
but then came back and was even stronger. But what she had to learn through the process is not only be good at academic, but she had to become the best advocate for herself. You know, and so it's really fascinating. Your story is like, you had to become a good chemist, but you actually have to master sort of some politics and policy and international things. So you're having to learn parallel two things at once.
A lot of things.
So, okay, yeah, that's why it reminded me of that. Fascinating.
There's another parameter you need to put in this equation. So I'm coming from a country that has a lot of governments, have a lot of political issues. So being labeled as an Iranian is not easy in the United States.
Yeah.
Many times, you know, especially in this new administration, so it has not been easy. You know, when I say I'm Iranian, there are by default some thoughts that come in that are not true. But,
yeah.
you know, that's all about politics. So
sure.
I needed to kind of pass all those things. You
sure.
know, in order to
know that you're a good person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you finished your master's at Southern Illinois University, and then after 1 year, you started applying for PhD programs?
So during the second year.
Just in your second year.
Yeah, we both started to applying for PhD programs, and we were lucky that both of us got admission from the Department of Chemistry at the University of Arizona. So that was the only place where we both got admission.
So Department of Chemistry is part of the College of Science, which also has physics and psychology and other sort of disciplines.
Yeah.
It's one of the largest colleges at University of Arizona. Okay.
Correct.
So you're accepted. Fantastic.
We were accepted. We moved to Tucson, and you know, we were happy, you know, to come to Tucson. And one of the reasons was the diversity that we had here compared to Illinois.
Uh-huh.
I met wonderful people over there. Made a lot of friends.
In Illinois.
But still, you know, the type of diversity is not, you know, as
Rich, maybe.
As Tucson.
Okay.
And that's because maybe, you know, we are closer to California, and also we are closer to Mexico, the border of Mexico. That could be the reason. But I always like, you know, to be in Tucson, because the first thing that happens to me all the time. I go to a store, you know, they start, you know, talking to me in Spanish. They think I'm Mexican. I'm totally fine, you know, and I'm sorry. And I, you know, respond in English, and they get a little offended. They think, you know, I'm Mexican who do not like Spanish. I need to clarify that I wish I knew, you know, Spanish, because I would have, you know, talked Spanish by now.
Okay.
So anyways, we like Tucson, and it's a great place, you know, for students, and every school has its own, you know, like bad and good things. But generally for a student in my major, you know, the pay is good for grad school, and the city is cheap city, so it's not expensive.
Yeah.
So during the school, you don't see that much of, you know, financial hardship.
So even though your income is relatively low, because there's two people, you and your girlfriend who became your wife, you could actually live well, as long as you saved your money and spent well and so forth.
We got married right before we started.
You got married. Okay, so then you can really combine your incomes at that point.
Yeah.
So so far we've talked about, and this is fascinating, Mon, about all of the elements that go, because everything you've talked about has been, in order to study, I have to do 10 steps, and then I do some study, and then I take 10 more steps.
Yeah.
Either it's academic, like coming to the United States, or it's through the government, or visa process, and
mm-hmm.
so forth. So I started off the show by talking about you study molecular engineering.
Correct.
And some other things. What interested you in that, and how did you get into being interested in detecting enzymes and other things that would detect cancer earlier?
Sure.
I would like to put
something in the process.
Yes, go ahead.
Answer your question and start talking about those things. So when we decided to come to the United States, it wasn't just about the opportunity. So United States, you know, at least at the time, had the largest number of top universities in the world.
Yeah.
And the level of advancement, technological advancement in the United States was something encouraging. So as a person who was studying in another country, I wanted to be in a country where I had more tools, better environment to do research. So that was one of the reasons, mm-hmm. you know, I came to the United States. It would be the same thing for Canada and Australia at the same time, but at the time U.S. was a really good place to
yeah.
come. I don't know if I would make the same decision today
yeah.
because of a lot of political things that are happening, but...
That make it more difficult to enter the United States.
I couldn't visit, that's not the only thing, I couldn't visit, you know, my family for the past 5 years because if I leave, you know, I need to go through the whole visa process. Anyways. So going back
sure.
to your question about, I try avoid you know talking too much about politics. Not that many people.
No, but I mean, in your case, it's part of your reality. You have
it
to just
is.
Do the processes
oh, yeah.
to get through the visa
yeah.
process. Okay.
Actually, so Zach, you and I, you know, we knew each other from the university as well. So you remember that I went for a visit for 4 weeks. It ended up being like
That's right.
4 months because I couldn't get my visa to come back
yeah.
right in the middle of my
your PhD program.
My PhD program, and it was still, you know, Obama's administration. So things were not really easy as it claims to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember
like,
clearly. So
yeah.
At the time, Iman and I were serving in student government, graduate student government, and Iman was in a leadership role, and I was also in a leadership role, and he. Was delayed, so I ended up, you know, doing extra things, and he was
yeah.
able to do some work from Iran, but he was frustrated because I want to come back and do my studies, but I also signed up to do some leadership service.
Yep.
And you were elected to do leadership service, and it wasn't possible. So I know that was a very frustrating moment
yeah.
for you.
So anyway, so how I got into this type of research was that when I started at the University of Arizona, my core training is chemistry, so I was trained as a chemist. As a person who knows different types of material, can combine them to get something new from them for different applications. And you know, when I started my second master's degree, the one in the US, it was in medicinal chemistry. I was working on some compounds that could have application for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
So from then, you know, I got familiar with this type of topics, you know, medical, biomedical, pharmaceutical application. When I started my PhD, I wanted to have that skill, to practice my core skill, which is chemistry. At the same time, I wanted to enhance and enrich my experience, my professional experience. So I joined a lab where we used chemistry skills to make materials and compounds that were used for biomedical applications.
Okay.
So one of the things we used to do in the lab was that. So I think almost all people are familiar with MRI. So that's a medical device, you know, when you have a broken bone or a damaged, you know, area and the damaged muscle or a nerve problem or whatever. You sit in that, machine, MRI machine, and a scan of your body, you know, reveals, you know, what the problem is. Do you want me to...
No, continue,
okay.
Yeah.
So, but please stop me when I'm going too much into detail.
Yeah.
I know that...
No, I think most people understand if they get a broken bone or need to have something scanned in their body,
yeah.
and it's the tube, right, where you're put
you
into a tube,
exactly.
and the whole scanner looks at your body and a particular part of your body to see what's going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
I joined a lab where, you know, for MRI, I need to mention something else. For MRI, a lot of time, you know, contrast agents are used. So when you have a typical normal scan, what happens is that you see images of different parts of the body. If you have some types of material, they are called contrast agents, in your body, the resolution or the quality of the images get better. So
mm-hmm.
there could be a contrast between the particular tissue versus the rest of the
Yeah,
tissue.
So contrast agent is a substance used to increase the contrast of structures or fluids within the body in medical
tissue.
Imaging. And so just imagine a visual, like just think of an x-ray, something similar. If you see contrast with an x-ray, instead of seeing you know, pure white in a bone, you see a sliver that's gray or a slightly
exactly.
different color,
yeah.
you could say, oh, there's something going on.
More information
More information
can be
And so the contrast agents injected into a body help enhance the image and give people better diagnostic tools to say that's what's going on. Okay, that's what Iman's talking about. Okay.
Yeah. So I got familiar with contrast agents, you know, in that laboratory. And then as a chemist, what our project was, you know, to make a new types of contrast agents for the detection of cancer. So we designed material compounds, we call them molecules, like the basic form of the material. So we designed molecules that could undergo a change, you know, when they...
When they come together?
Come together, or when they were interacting with enzymes or other types of biomolecules. So if you have, for instance, compound or molecule A, when you have an enzyme and compound A, you could have compound B. So the way that compound A, you know, showed up in MRI was different from the way that compound B showed in MRI.
Okay.
So the differences that we observed during this process could help us to understand whether that enzyme was working or not.
Yeah, so putting these two compounds together with enzyme, whatever
one
the enzyme is.
One compound with the enzyme and the changes that happen to that one compound to give you the second compound.
Yeah, so what it's sort of like is one will give you a flashlight and one will give you no light.
Exactly.
Okay, and if you see a flashlight, then you're like, oh, now we can see better with this mixture, with these compounds.
Yeah,
okay.
And that could give you information about the activity of the enzymes. What does it mean is that, so you didn't have that flashlight versus the time that you had the flashlight. But to have this, you needed to have an enzyme or something to do that work for you. So
okay.
This way, whenever we observe that flashlight, we say, okay, the enzyme is doing its job. So why we used this method was that, so MRI is very powerful a medical machine, and you can get a lot of useful information from tissue and specific regions in the body. So we wanted to use this method for early detection of cancer. And a lot of enzymes, a lot of biomolecules, the molecule that exists in our body, they undergo changes, you know, in cancer. They are either more active or less active, they present or they're absent. There are different, you know, status, you know, in cancer, you know, regarding all those biomolecules.
Yeah, so someone in like WebMD or just on the news says, you know, we want to detect cancer earlier. These are very much the mechanics.
This is the
mechanics of detecting earlier. So
yeah.
If you're able to combine one compound with an enzyme and that flashlight appears,
yeah.
I'll talk about it that way.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, with this flashlight, now we can see something potentially earlier. And if it's earlier, then we can do more things to... provide maybe less invasive treatments or better treatments earlier for the person.
Something very important earlier. So right now what happens is that a person goes to doctor and the doctor says, you know, you might have cancer. So the person goes through a series of diagnoses, you know, procedures, and many times, you know, a piece of tissue is removed from that area. It goes to a lab where they test it against some kits they have, you know, to realize whether the person has cancer or not.
Yeah.
So what happens after the fact that the person has cancer, we try to detect it. So that causes a delay in treatment. So with cancer, specifically with cancer, if we can detect it earlier and we start treatment earlier, there is much higher chance of survival. So in a lot of type of cancer, you know, if the person is diagnosed earlier and treatment starts earlier, there is better chance for that person to live.
But it's probably not just survival you're talking about, it's also how someone feels during treatment, right?
And during treatment.
Because if you treat it earlier, you're getting the treatment, but your body's healthier, so your body's not going to be as affected.
Yeah.
Also,
when it gets, you know, to later stages of cancer, the type of the treatment you get is more severe, there are more harm, you know, because
more
you're
side effects.
Fighting, you know, something serious in your body that now has a lot of power. You know, versus when you start very, very early, that thing is not really powerful, and, you know, you can remove it or, you know, destroy it with much less, you know, severity or side effects.
Thanks for listening to part two of the interview with Dr. Iman Darieh, who studies drug discovery and development, cancer biology, and medical imaging. To continue listening, visit drz.net. That's drz.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at Dr. Z Podcasts and Instagram. @drznet. As always, happy deciding. The People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z, that's me, Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's dr-z.net/about.